matter how hard I try, you keep pushing me aside and I can't break through. There's no talking to you. So sad you're leaving. Takes time to believe this. But after all said and done, you're gonna be the lonely one. Oh, see you believe in life after love after love.
Oh, excuse me, sorry there, I didn't see you coming. Let me just turn this down for a minute. Okay. Oh, wow, hi, welcome. You caught me off guard. All right, so all this mumbo jumbo about initiating a conversation, I gave in and I've welcomed Peterson Toscano. We're just going to have a brief discussion on his thoughts on homosexuality. All right, I'm going to try to give this a listen, please. Anyway, Peterson Toscano is the creator of Doin' Time in the Homo Nomo Halfway House and Transfigurations, a play about transgender Bible characters. Okay, whatever you say, Peterson, transgender. He also regards himself as an ex-gay survivor. Like, that can be true. Anyway, let's just give this a shot. So we'll start with this. Leviticus says, "A man shall not lay with a man as with a woman. It is an abomination." Bam, got you right there. So doesn't the Bible make it clear right there that gay relationships are a sin?
Is that what Leviticus is talking about? I mean, it's talking about a man lying with a man.
Mm-hmm.
What does that even mean? I mean, like, okay, Hebrew is an ancient language with a limited vocabulary. That word to lie with also means to rape. How do you know that that's not saying a man shall not rape a man as a man shall not rape a woman or something like that? You know, I mean, and the thing is, it's about identity. I mean, I get so frustrated. People get all, like, caught up and distracted with my butt. Like, thinking that, like, gays is all about, like, what happens in a butt. But, you know, there are gay people who've never had sex. There are gay people who are in relationships, but they actually don't have anal sex. And I, you know, and I just, like, get too kind of frustrated sometimes because I'll talk to somebody and they really are all caught up in my behind, when really it's about what's in my heart and it's about how I'm wired. And, you know, just like there are all different types of straight people, there are all different types of gay people. And at the end of the day, it's about who you are in your core of a person. And for me, how I see it, I'm a Christian who happens to have an orientation that I'm attracted to men. And it would be an abomination for me to lie with a woman because I don't desire her. I don't want her. And it's hurtful to her to be partnered with someone who doesn't care.
Well, we'll move on to this next question and I'll see where it goes. But and these idiots in the mental health profession, psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, so they tell me you can't change someone from being gay. And I know you put yourself through, what was it, 17 years ex-gay therapy?
That's right.
So what happened with that? Couldn't you be cured?
Well, apparently not. I did pretty much everything in my power. And I didn't do it casually. I mean, it was my number one quest for 17 years because I thought, hey, it's wrong to be this way. So I need to fix it. And so I went to ministers, I went to counselors, I spent over $30,000 in treatment doing everything I could. And the best people could tell me when their treatments didn't work was something like, well, I guess you didn't want it badly enough. I'm like, after 17 years and over $30,000 on three continents, I think that's disrespectful to say, because I clearly wanted it. I never chose to be gay. I mean, I kind of, these feelings developed naturally for me. I chose not to be gay for 17 years, every day of my life. And no matter how hard I wanted it, how much help I got, those desires didn't change. And the only thing that did change was my mental health. And I grew depressed, suicidal, and confused, and that became dangerous for me.
What was your reason for trying to change that?
There are lots of reasons, you know, and some of them are really subtle. I mean, obviously, as a Christian, I felt I couldn't be gay and Christian. So I continually chose Jesus over being gay because I thought I couldn't be both. But there are loads of other things that pressured me. I mean, for one, to be straight in America in the church is very, very favorable. I mean, you get a big party, you get lots of gifts. But even bigger than that, you know, I mean, you're really affirmed. Even single people who are straight and in their 30s and 40s, they realize that they kind of are not completely full-fledged members of the church because they're not bringing a family to the table. And churches are so family-oriented often. So there's this sense of, I would be more valuable to the world if I were straight, if I were masculine like other men, if I had a wife and kids, that my family, society, the church, we just see me as a better person because of that.
Now, talking about male homosexuality specifically, I've also heard the argument from the Exodus International and different psychologists like that say that the male, it's your God-given gender, and it's a great thing, and it's a great responsibility to be that strong Christian man. And by, you know, turning against that for homosexuality, it's you're not living to be that God-given gender. So how, and they're saying you deny God-given plan for your life as a man. So how do you approach that?
Well, the one thing that's true about most people who work at an organization like Exodus is they may be well-meaning, but they're usually not particularly well-educated. And that many of the ex-gay leaders, including Alan Chambers, who heads Exodus, the highest degree they hold is typically a high school diploma with maybe a couple of college classes, but usually don't even have a degree in psychology or even the Bible. So part of it is they're woefully ignorant about psychology, about gender, how gender is formed, any gender theories that are out there. This idea that somebody is born with a God-given gender is an opinion. But even if you look in the scriptures, there are all different types of men that express their gender so differently. I mean, you'll have somebody like Esau, who's this big, hairy, masculine, hunter-gatherer guy. And then you have Jacob, his twin, who is smooth skin. He's very gentle and sensitive. He stays amongst the tents where the women are. He's a fabulous cook. They're both male. They're both presented actually as heterosexual, but their genders are kind of different. So this idea that you have to fit into one box as a male is inconsistent even with the scriptures for people who find the scriptures compelling. More importantly is for people to be authentic, to be themselves. And ultimately, according to Paul, in Christ there is neither male nor female, but there's a deeper core personality. And how we present ourselves to the world, well, that comes out in lots of different ways because of lots of different reasons. But the key thing is to be true to ourselves.
I like what you're saying. I'll admit you're kind of getting me to think differently about this. One other argument that I hear that I also want to present. Is it better to live in God's eyes heterosexually because I've heard people say it's just clear, a man and woman biologically created for reproducing and raising children, then you raise children in the church.
Better for who? Because I know women, straight women, who married men who desperately want to be straight. They were not. And they went to the altar and they prayed and they went to therapy. And sometimes they told their fiancés up front, sometimes they didn't, that they were attracted to men. But they believed that God was going to do a miracle. And instead, they had a tragedy. They did have a family, but the family fell apart and the marriage fell apart, and the woman was often very deeply wounded by the whole experience. And in a way, the church enables these kind of relationships where they want so much for the man to be saved and to be right in God's eyes according to their standard that they are sacrificing these virgins. And women are getting drawn into marriages without having full knowledge that their husbands are not attracted to them. And then 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the line, the whole thing falls apart. And marriage isn't easy for anyone, you know, including straight people. But if one of the partners is not romantically or sexually attracted to the other, that is definitely a recipe for disaster.
Yes.
Okay. So I think really strong families is a really wonderful thing. It's so important, and I would say part of God's plan. And so I think it's important to look at who is getting married. Are they compatible for each other? And to support the marriage for two men, two women, a man and a woman, instead of constantly undermining those relationships by either having a mixed orientation marriage or saying that my relationship with my partner is somehow less than or evil or wrong, and then undermining our family life.
One last topic here. Regardless of whether being gay is right or wrong, and whoever's eyes we're talking about here, church bodies often refuse to even talk about the issue, and if they're regarding it as equal as all other sins, this one particular topic is definitely much more silenced and looked down upon and considered this worst sin of all, and suddenly just someone coming into the church that has same-sex attraction, it boxes them in and labels them, and they're being judged in the last place they should ever be judged. And, you know, people in the church making comments and speaking, where they assuming that everyone in the church is straight and that there could not, you know, they could be hurting someone that's sitting right next to them. So what are your final thoughts on what, you know, quote-unquote Christians could do about this?
Ryan, I'm so glad you raised this, because in the church we often talk about reaching out to the other, and people talk about how Jesus hung out with prostitutes and lepers and all different folks. And so often for the white evangelical church, the other is somebody outside of the walls. So a poor person, you know, a homeless person, you know, whatever, a Muslim, somebody outside the walls. Mm-hmm. But with lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people, they spring up among us. There are sons, there are pastors' wives, there are all kinds of folks who come to an understanding of who they are. They've been hiding it from people. And so the other is among us. It's not somebody who's coming in, but somebody who is from within and may represent one of the largest minority populations in many churches that are almost exclusively white. And so there are people among us, young people, who get messages. And these messages can be absolutely destructive to their hearts and their minds and their souls, because they're being told that they are less than, that there's something fundamentally wrong with them. And they're terrified to open their mouths because they anticipate that there will be some sort of shunning or rejection or judgment. And that is a horrible, toxic environment for people to be in. So even straight people who have a gay loved one are silenced, and they don't even know how to talk about it. And that is not good pastoral care at all. When instead, if people can just be open to talk and people don't react out of fear and ignorance and judgment, then you build a stronger church and people have healthier lives.
I couldn't agree more on that. That was a good answer, but guess we're all out of time for this one. Thank you for being part of my soundtrack.
Can't wait to hear it.
All right, yeah, you'll definitely be getting a copy.